Good afternoon. I will call to order this remote hearing of the House Commerce Committee and ask Mr. Dockendorf to take the roll.
Chair Stevenson.
Present.
Vice Chair Cotiza Watoon.
Present.
Representative O'Driscoll.
O'Driscoll present.
Representative Barr.
Here.
Representative Carlson.
Carlson's present.
Representative Dabney is excused. Representative Elkins.
Present.
Representative Haley.
Present.
Representative Cagle.
Present.
Representative Lee.
Lee present.
Representative Lilly. Representative Lislegard is excused. Representative Lucero.
In need of caffeine, but always happy to be here.
Representative Olson.
Present.
Representative Farr.
Present.
Representative Rasmussen.
Rasmussen present.
Representative Richardson.
Present.
And Representative Tice.
Tice present.
And Representative Lilly.
He is just joining now.
Very good. Well, we have a quorum. The first item on our agenda is approval of our minutes from March 9th, 2022. Vice Chair Cotiza Watoon, do you have a motion?
Mr. Chair, I would move approval of the minutes from last week.
Vice Chair Cotiza Watoon moves approval of the minutes from March 9th, 2022. Any discussion to that motion? Hearing none, all in favor say aye.
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 Opposed? The motion prevails and the minutes from March 9th, 2022 are approved. The first item on our agenda is House File 3626 from Representative Carlson. Representative Carlson, would you like to move your bill?
Yes, Chair Stevenson, I would like to move House File 3626.
All right. Representative Carlson moves House File 3626 be laid over for possible inclusion to the omnibus bill. I understand you have an amendment.
Yes, Chair Stevenson, it's an author's amendment, the DE2.
I assume this gets the bill in the shape you'd like the committee to consider it?
That is correct, Chair.
All right. Any discussion to the DE2? Seeing none, all in favor say aye. Aye.
Aye.
Opposed? Motion prevails and the DE2 amendment is adopted. Representative Carlson, to your bill.
Thank you, Chair Stevenson and members. This is a simple bill. The word beer appears throughout Minnesota law with no statutory definition. This bill simply corrects that. So it's as straightforward as that. Chair Stevenson, I do have a testifier, Mr. Brant Irwin, to speak further to the bill.
Welcome back to the committee, Mr. Irwin.
Thank you, Chair Stevenson, and thank you, Representative Carlson. Can everybody hear me? Perfect.
Yep.
My name is Brant Irwin. I'm the president of the Minnesota Beer Wholesalers Association. We represent all of the family-owned beer distributors in the state. As Representative Carlson identified, I think this bill is pretty straightforward. The purpose is to clean up the statutory definitions by doing two things. First, it makes clear that references to beer and malt liquor will have the same definition. As Representative Carlson identified, there is no statutory definition of the word beer, despite its usage in Minnesota statutes. So this bill fixes that. There's also then a small modification to the definition of malt liquor to ensure that the definition applies not only to fermented products made from malt, but also fermented products made from malt substitutes. So this would make the definition consistent with both Minnesota's administrative rules and then the federal definition of beer, which the administrative rules cite to, which defines beer to include both malt-based fermented products and fermented products made from malt substitutes. So those are really the only two changes being made. And with that, I will just stand for any questions.
All right. There are no other testifiers who signed up to discuss this bill. Is there any discussion to this bill or member questions? Seeing none, any closing comments from you, Representative Carlson?
Thank you, Chair Stevenson, and members. I appreciate your support.
And with that, we congratulate Representative Carlson on what might be the shortest hearing in the history of the Commerce Committee. And we will lay the bill over for possible inclusion. The next item on the agenda is House File 3296. I had to check to make sure that wasn't the same bill number. 3296 from Chair Joachim. Chair Joachim, welcome back to the Commerce Committee. I will move House File 3296 be recommended to be placed on the General Register. And Representative Chair Joachim, I understand you have an amendment.
Yes, Mr. Chair, I have the A2 amendment.
All right, I will move the A2 amendment to get the bill in the shape the author would like it to be considered. Chair Joachim, would you like to describe the amendment?
Yes, the A2 amendment makes two quick technical changes that the stakeholders have agreed upon.
Wonderful. Any discussion to the A2 amendment? Seeing none, all in favor say aye.
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 Opposed? The motion prevails and the A2 amendment is adopted. Chair Joachim, to your bill.
Thank you, Mr. Chair and members. This bill is the product of a lot of work done by many stakeholders and legislators over the course of the last several sessions. In last year's Transportation Omnibus Bill, a salvage title task force was created. Both myself and Representative Petersburg served from the House, and Senator Jasinski and Carlson were appointed by the Senate. We met as a working group 7 times during the interim. We received helpful input from stakeholders, direction from the Department of Public Safety, and the bill before you is the product of those meetings and conversations. You also have the final report from the working group in your packets if you want some very scintillating reading. So in short, the core policy changes in the bill are to address title washing loopholes by requiring a salvage or prior salvage brand on all vehicles that are acquired by an insurance company as a total loss or that incur damages over 80% of the vehicle value threshold. Require written disclosure of vehicle brands, flooding, or other prior damage. Extend the title, branding, and disclosure requirements to commercial vehicles as well as motorcycles. The changes eliminate scenarios where a vehicle that is neither high value nor late model can end up with a clear title, as well as treat in-state and out-of-state vehicles in a consistent manner. The changes also require disclosures that will aid consumers as they navigate purchasing damaged yet roadworthy vehicles. And more importantly, it ensures the agreement reached by the insurance industry and the auto repair shops over the years related to high value and late model cars remains a viable definition of a salvaged vehicle, while at the same time allowing for more clarity for cars that fall outside of that agreement's measure. A wide range of changes throughout the bill involve readability, clarity in the flow of statutes and title branding. They're based on suggestions and several discussions with DVS. This includes revising definitions, eliminating distinctions that are no longer necessary, and more clearly separating the brand requirements in Section 160A.151 and 325F.6642. Brand provisions are further centralized as well. Mr. Chair and members, I think everyone involved in the working group appreciated the complex nature of this area of law. The working group chaired by Senator Jasinski really did do a great deal of work. I think the progress made to this language will aid consumers and strengthen our statutes, making the system work better for all of us. In the packets, like I said, you have the Savage Task Force report that's dated January 26, 2022. And then to provide very brief testimony today, I also have with me Ron Alvord from Legal Aid and Pong Zhang, Director of Department of Vehicle Services. And I believe there's a few stakeholders or other experts on the line who can answer more technical questions.
Well, this committee is always pleased to hear from Mr. Elwood. Mr. Elwood.
Well, thank you, Mr. Chair. I really appreciate that. Ron Elwood with Legal Aid. Mr. Chair and members, I first want to thank Representative Joachim and Representative Petersburg for solving the issue of the categorization and disclosure of salvage title branding. It has certainly been vexing, and it has taken many years and much discussion to arrive at the solution presented by House File 3296, which up to now has been extremely elusive. But due to the efforts and perseverance of Chair Joachim and Representative Petersburg, they were able to fashion a solution around which everyone could coalesce, and of course the task force chaired by Senator Jasinski. The continued work of Representative Joachim and Representative Petersburg to keep the stakeholders at the table and talking has borne fruit in the form of this bill, which I urge you to pass. I also want to recognize the tremendous assistance and expert information provided by the DPS staff all through the process. They are really to be commended and thanked. When you get the auto auctions, the repair shops, the auto dealers, the parts dealers, the insurance federation, and legal aid, all to get behind a bill, that's quite an accomplishment. And really, this bill represents an important and long-incoming advancement in transparency and consumer protection. At its core, this bill and its progenitors were aimed at giving consumers the information they need and deserve about a car they are contemplating purchasing in order to allow them to make informed marketplace decisions. This bill will not only help legal aid clients when they are shopping for a used car, but it will also help all consumers when they are in the market for a new or used vehicle. Thank you very much for the opportunity to testify in support of House File 3296.
Thank you, Mr. Elwood. We also have DVS Director Pong Zhang here. Director Zhang.
Mr. Chair, members of the committee, my name is Pong Zhang, Director of the Driver and Vehicle Services Division. And I just want to take this opportunity to thank the Salvage Task Force, including Representatives Joachim and Petersburg, the House staff, for their tireless work in moving this effort forward, an opportunity for DVS to contribute to the work. And I also want to extend my appreciation to the DVS staff who spent many hours providing expertise and contributions to the language. I'd like to share that DVS has no concerns about the bill, and we're confident that we can implement the bill and administer these changes with no fiscal impact as represented on our fiscal note. And we believe that these changes will improve transparency for automobile customers with regard to title branding. Thank you again to the members of the Salvage Title Task Force and all of those who assisted in this work. Mr. Chair, that concludes my remarks, and I'll stand for questions.
Thank you, Director Zhang. There are no other public members of the public who signed up to testify, so we will move to member discussion and questions. Representative Lucero.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. And my question is for Representative Joachim. Can you confirm my understanding here that that the definition of late model or high value did not change as a product of the task force?
Chair Joachim.
Thank you, Chair Stevenson. And yes, Representative Lucero, the issue that you and I chatted about 3 years ago that started this ball rolling in transportation is still intact.
Representative Lucero.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. And while I was not a member of the task force because there wasn't enough room for two members of the minority to be on the task force, I very much appreciate the work of Representative Chair Joachim and others, Ron Elwood, and the many stakeholders, because we had repeated conversations on this in advance of the task force trying to resolve this issue and bringing forward one of my near and dear desires in this area is to increase the transparency for consumers. So thank you, everybody, for the great work on this, and I'm just very excited that this bill is before us. Thank you.
Thank you, Representative Lucero. Seeing no other members wishing to be recognized, Chair Joachim, any final comments?
It's a good bill, folks, and I want to also thank Representative Lucero for some of the time we spent online with all the stakeholders as well. I ask for your support.
Wonderful. I will renew the motion that House File 3296, as amended, be recommended to be placed on the General Register, and Mr. Dockendorf will take the roll.
Chair Stevenson.
Aye.
Stevenson, aye. Vice Chair Cotiza Watoon.
Aye.
Cotiza Watoon, aye. Representative O'Driscoll.
O'Driscoll, aye.
O'Driscoll, aye. Representative Barr.
Aye.
Barr, aye. Representative Carlson.
Carlson, aye.
Carlson, aye. Representative Davney is excused. Representative Elkins.
Elkins, aye.
Elkins, aye. Representative Haley.
Haley, aye.
Haley, aye. Representative Cagle.
Aye.
Cagle, aye. Representative Lee.
Lee, aye.
Lee, aye. Representative Lilly.
Lilly, aye.
Lilly, aye. Representative Lislegard is excused. Representative Lucero.
Lucero, yes.
Lucero, aye. Representative Olson.
Aye.
Olson, aye. Representative Farr.
Farr, aye.
Farr, aye. Representative Rasmussen.
Rasmussen, aye.
Rasmussen, aye. Representative Richardson.
Aye.
Richardson, aye. And Representative Tice.
Tice, aye.
Tice, aye.
Yeah, there being 16 ayes and 0 nays, the motion prevails, and House File 3296, as amended, is recommended to be placed on the General Register. Thank you, Chair Youakim. The next bill on our agenda today is House File 2629 by our own Vice Chair Katiza Watoon. Representative Katiza Watoon, would you like to move your bill?
Thank you, Mr. Chair. And yes, I would move that House File 2629 be recommended to be placed on the General Register.
Representative Katiza Watoon moves House File 2629 be recommended to be placed on the General Register. And Representative Katiza Watoon, do you have an amendment?
Yes, Mr. Chair, I do have a DE1 amendment. Move that, please.
All right. Representative Katiza Watoon moves the DE1 amendment. Would you describe the amendment for the committee?
Certainly. Members, the DE1 amendment is actually a pretty simple amendment, but there was a lot of line inserts and removals. So the heart of the bill remains the same, and we just removed a part based on some additional feedback from stakeholders.
Any discussion to the DE1 amendment? Seeing none, all in favor say aye.
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 Opposed? The motion prevails and the DE1 amendment is adopted. Representative Katiza Watoon, to your bill.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Members, House File 2629, as amended, is a statutory update to our credit card processing law regarding surcharges. 35 years ago, when the law was originally passed, there was no internet and telephone calls used to be charged by the minute. Today, online sales continue to increase, and this proposal seeks to achieve parity between brick and mortar businesses and online and phone retailers. After discussions and feedback from the retailers and the bankers, House File 2629, as amended, does not change or add any additional disclosure requirements on retailers who are already covered by our current law. It merely applies the law to those merchants who sell online or over the phone, such that all retail transactions, including surcharges, are regulated in the same way. And with that, Mr. Chair, I would invite Vicki Harris to provide a bit more background.
Wonderful. Vicki Harris, Ms. Harris.
Good afternoon, Chair Stevenson and members of the committee. My name is Vicki Harris. I'm a director with the State Government Affairs for American Express. Thank you for bringing this bill forward, Mr. Chairman and Representative Katiza Watoon. This bill, as amended today, modernizes longstanding Minnesota law concerning credit card surcharges. In 1987, the Minnesota legislature enacted a surcharge law permitting retailers to add a surcharge to purchases paid for by credit card and requiring sellers to disclose the surcharge to consumers, as well as limiting the surcharge to 5% of the purchase price. The problem that the bill faces, as Representative Katiza Watoon has articulated, is that the bill right now only applies to traditional in-person sales. It does not cover sales made over the internet or over the phone because those sales were virtually unknown in 1987. That means that the law today puts obligations on in-person retailers like your local mom and pop shops that only engage in in-person sales that are not placed by law on internet and phone sellers. HF 2629 would correct this unfair imbalance as it relates to disclosure of the credit card surcharges. Discussion with stakeholders such as the retail and banking interests led to today's amendments, which ensure that the retailers currently covered by the law's notice requirements remain untouched by the new law. It merely places new like notice requirements on online and over the phone retailers. Around the country, the practice of credit card surcharging is on the rise. Software vendors are promoting products that make it easier for retailers to add surcharges to credit purchases. The growth of these practices have prompted several attorney generals and state consumer protection agencies from states such as Tennessee and Utah to warn citizens against surcharges that are undisclosed or that go beyond the merchant's cost of processing credit card payments. While credit card companies can mandate surcharge disclosure and limit amounts, there is no true mechanism to enforce this effectively. That's why states like Minnesota have stepped in to regulate this practice. HF 2629 does not change or add additional disclosure requirements on retailers already covered by current law. It merely adds a disclosure requirement to the merchants who sell online and by phone. The law today favors these new types of vendors. Fairness would put all sellers on the same level. That's why we urge your support of this bill. And with that, I welcome any questions or comments you have, and I thank you for hearing my testimony.
Thank you very much, Ms. Harris. I see no other people signed up to testify, so we'll open up to member discussion and questions. Representative Rasmussen.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. And I don't know if this question is best for the bill author or for Ms. Harris, but I was wondering if you could just walk me through how this would be enforced with out-of-state companies. You know, I understand how we could enforce, you know, at a brick-and-mortar level with our current law, but if we have an online business from another state and we have a Minnesota consumer that is making a purchase on that bit, you know, on that website or over the phone, I was wondering if someone could just talk through how we would actually enforce this law with out-of-state businesses.
Representative Katiza Watoon, do you want to take the first crack at that one, or do you want to suggest
Yeah, thank you, Mr. Chair. I'm hopeful that Mrs. Harris might be able to shed a little bit better light on that. It's a great question, and I know that she's worked with other states across the country on a similar issue. So,
certainly, Mr. Chair. Yes, certainly, Mr. Chairman, Representative, I'm happy to answer that question. The language of the bill as amended is specifically written to require retailers doing business in Minnesota. And so the law would be specific to businesses that are selling in Minnesota when they're transacting business with individuals who are purchasing from that state. And the disclosure requirement would specify that it's Minnesota law.
Representative Rasmussen.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. And so just to make sure I understand this and for the public listening in, so if I had a California business, or there's a California business that was selling online, and you had a Minnesota consumer who made a purchase on that and violated, the provisions in this bill, the state of Minnesota would be able to enforce this with the California merchant that was selling to a Minnesota consumer, whether it's over the phone or online. Is that correct, Ms. Harris?
Mr. Chairman, Representative, that is correct.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I appreciate it.
Thank you, Representative Rasmussen. Any additional discussion to the bill? Seeing no further, Representative Barr, just under the wire there.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. This might be, I might be misunderstanding or just need a quick clarification from whichever one, Katiza Watoon or Ms. Harris, whichever one of you two would care to grab this. It says cash-like and credit and charge cards. I just want to clarify, a debit card would be a cash transaction, or would that be covered under the surcharge, be required a surcharge with using a debit card?
Ms. Harris, do you want to answer that one?
Yes, thank you, Mr. Chairman, Representative Barr. The law right now is, Minnesota's current law is written as to credit card surcharges. So debit card surcharges are not covered under current law and would not be covered based on the amendment that is brought forward today.
Representative Barr?
No, thank you.
All right, any further discussion to the bill? Seeing none, any closing comments, Vice Chair Katiza Watoon?
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Members, I think this update is appropriate, and I think that, you know, when we consider all the changes that have happened over the last 35 years, sometimes the legislature needs to adapt in kind. So I appreciate the support, and thank you.
With that, Representative Katiza Watoon renews her motion that House file 2629, as amended, be recommended to be placed on the general register, and Mr. Dockendorf will take the roll.
Chair Stevenson.
Aye.
Stevenson, aye. Vice Chair Katiza Watoon.
Aye.
Katiza Watoon, aye. Representative O'Driscoll.
O'Driscoll, no.
O'Driscoll, no. Representative Barr.
No.
Barr, no. Representative Carlson.
Carlson, aye.
Carlson, aye. Representative Dabney is excused. Representative Elkins.
Elkins, aye.
Elkins, aye. Representative Haley.
Haley, no.
Haley, no. Representative Kegel.
Aye.
Cagle, aye. Representative Lee.
Lee, aye.
Lee, aye. Representative Lilly.
Aye.
Lilly, aye. Representative Lislegard is excused. Representative Lucero.
Lucero, no.
Lucero, no. Representative Olson.
Aye.
Olson, aye. Representative Farr.
Farr, no.
Farr, no. Representative Rasmussen.
Rasmussen, no.
Rasmussen, no. Representative Richardson.
Aye.
Richardson, aye. And Representative Tice.
Tice, no.
Tice, no.
With 9 ayes and 7 nays, the motion prevails, and House File 2629 is recommended to be placed on, as amended, is recommended to be placed on the General Register. Well, members, we are just cruising through our agenda today. Our last bill is House File 3724 from Representative Robbins. Welcome to the committee, Representative Robbins. I will move that House File 3724 be recommended to be re-referred to the Judiciary, Finance, and Civil Law Committee. Representative Robbins, to your bill.
Thank you, Mr. Chair, and thank you to the members of the committee. I appreciate this opportunity. I've never been in commerce before, so it's kind of fun. I appreciate your willingness to hear this bill. I think it's incredibly important. I am, as many of you know, I'm the mom of 3 girls, and I came across some articles in the Wall Street Journal during the interim about how social media is affecting particularly teenage girls regarding eating disorders, but also teens of both sexes regarding eating disorders, drugs, and pornography. And it was so disturbing, members. I've posted the articles to the committee link, and I hope you will take the time to read them. So that got me thinking and working over the interim with our nonpartisan and research staff about what we could do about this. And I realized that as a state, there might be limitations on what we can do, but I just feel like we have to start. The Child Internet Protection Act was passed by the federal government in 2000. It was updated in 2011, and none of it touches social media platforms. And I'm just shocked that nothing is happening on the federal level. And so I feel like we have a responsibility to get the ball rolling at the states. And so that is why I brought this bill. So basically, it's very simple. The bill would say that social media platforms cannot use algorithms to target content to users under the age of 18. And I decided to take that approach after consulting with different experts and our research staff, because it's sort of the cleanest way to stop this craziness of these algorithms driving young users into harmful content. And so it's a bright line, but I think it's an important approach. It's also probably easier for the companies because they're not having to navigate what's harmful, what's not. It's just a clean, you can't send use these algorithms against these kids. And the children who are age appropriate, differing on different platforms, can still have social media accounts, but they can only get content by people they like or friend. It's not driven by AI to them. And so they can still like different sites, and some of those may or may not be blocked depending on content, but there's still parental controls involved, still parental permission involved. I'm not changing any of that. It's just that they cannot use algorithms to drive content to kids anymore. And so I hope that you will consider this, and I look forward to the conversation. I know NAMI has sent a letter in support of this effort, and I did have some conversation with people from EMILY program, but they had a board meeting today and weren't able to testify. I also was reaching out to someone who I know has personally experienced this situation, but you know, was not able to get that testimony here today. But in a future committee stop, perhaps we will have her available. But I just have seen my daughters and their friends struggle in these areas, and I know a lot of young people do. So I just wanted to bring this to the committee. I appreciate very much the opportunity to talk with you about it and to hopefully get your support. Thank you.
Wonderful. We have a number of testifiers who've lined up to speak today, starting with Dr. Bryn Austin from the Harvard School of Public Health. Dr. Austin.
Thank you. Good afternoon, Chairperson Stevenson and honorable committee members. Thank you for the opportunity to speak with you today about House Bill 3724. I'm Bryn Austin, professor of pediatrics at Harvard Medical School and the Harvard T.H. Chan School of Public Health. I've specialized in research on eating disorders and adolescent health for over 20 years, and I'm here today to share the research on the negative effects of social media algorithms on the health and well-being of adolescents and their link with eating disorders. Eating disorders affect people of all ages, genders, races, ethnicities, sexual orientations, and body sizes. Nearly 30 million Americans will have an eating disorder in their lifetime, and nearly 2 million children alive today will have an eating disorder before they are 20 years old. Eating disorders are among the most deadly of any mental health condition, killing over 10,000 Americans every year, or one person every 52 minutes. Eating disorders not only have a devastating impact on individuals and families, but also on society as a whole, costing the U.S. economy almost $65 billion annually. Nearly 500,000 Minnesotans will have an eating disorder in their lifetime, and these conditions cost the Minnesota economy $1.1 billion each year. In an increasingly digital world, where a quarter of adolescents are on social media almost constantly, social media platforms continually bombard youth with highly visual content that is extremely engaging by design. Among 13 to 18-year-olds, 63% use social media every day. And although the federally set minimum permissible age is 13 to use social media, 13% of children as young as 8 to 12 use social media daily. We've known for years that social media platforms, especially image-based platforms like Instagram, can have very harmful effects on teen mental health, particularly for teens struggling with body image, anxiety, depression, and eating disorders. From experimental research, we know that algorithm-driven social media feeds are tailored to each user's engagement patterns and can draw vulnerable teens into a dangerous spiral of negative social comparison, hooking them into unrealistic ideals of appearance, body size, and shape. Imagine a teen likes a post about an extreme diet or a post with before and after pictures depicting weight loss, with both of which are types of content we know worsen body image and eating disorder symptoms in young people. The algorithm will then amp up those types of posts into their feed so that the teen sees much more of this type of harmful content. This can include content that is sponsored ads and paid influencer posts from commercial interests promoting hyper-focus on extreme thinness and unrealistic weight loss through dangerous and unproven means. And we know that young adolescents especially may have difficulties distinguishing ads from other content. But even more insidiously, algorithms identify content posted by troubled users promoting extreme eating disorder behavior and then leverage it for profit by placing ads for mainstream teen brands adjacent to this extreme content, knowing it will boost engagement. In effect, the algorithm is expressly designed to ensure this teen's feed is filled with a continuous stream of toxic content. As evidence continues to mount, the U.S. Surgeon General has recently called for greater transparency from tech companies on how algorithms are designed and operate. State governments can also take action. You have the power and responsibility to hold tech companies accountable by ensuring their algorithms do not harm young users. The children of Minnesota are counting on you. Thank you for the opportunity to share the research with you today, and thank you to Representative Robbins and members of the committee for your leadership on this important child health issue.
Thank you, Dr. Austin. I appreciate that testimony very much. Our next testifier is Adam Kovacevic. I hope I pronounced your name correctly, sir, from the Chamber of Progress.
Good afternoon, Mr. Chairman and members of the committee. I'm the CEO and founder of Chamber of Progress. We're a center-left tech industry association that works to ensure that all Americans benefit from technological leaps. And our corporate partners include companies like Google, Meta, and Twitter, but our partners don't have a vote or veto over our positions. One of our organization's top priorities is to promote safe and healthy online communities, and I know that this committee shares that goal. Unfortunately, while this bill is well-intentioned, it would make online communities worse, not better, for kids and teens. And that's because it would remove a critical tool, algorithms, that online platforms use to promote healthy content and to deprioritize unhealthy content. As the father of three young school-age kids myself, I share the concern that a lot of parents have about our kids being exposed to violent, destructive, inappropriate content online. But I also know that online platforms are using algorithms to make their services safer and healthier for kids. Just a couple of examples. YouTube Kids, it's a parentally supervised, curated experience for younger kids. And it uses a combination of algorithms and manual curation to show kid-friendly videos, only kid-friendly videos. This bill would make it impossible for YouTube Kids to use algorithms to surface kid-appropriate content. Twitter uses algorithms to help prioritize content that all of its users, including its teenage users, find relevant. So if a teenager is interested in, say, racial justice or Russia's invasion of Ukraine, and they follow multiple accounts and like tweets on those topics, that's great. But this bill's ban on algorithms would prevent her from being able to see tailored news on those topics. Last year, Instagram announced that it would be stricter about what types of content it recommends to 13 to 18-year-olds, and it rolled out new settings that give teens and parents more control over potentially upsetting content. But this bill would break those tools because they, too, rely on algorithms to sift through posts and weed out that upsetting content. And finally, last October, Senator Amy Klobuchar urged Instagram to take more aggressive action against posts glorifying eating disorders among teens, which Instagram actually banned. They banned posts encouraging eating disorders. And they last year started steering teens who are searching for information on disordered eating towards more helpful support resources. But unfortunately, Instagram's ability to find and remove eating disorder posts and to promote helpful resources is powered by, you guessed it, the very algorithms that this bill prohibits. So let me wrap by saying we all share the goal of wanting our kids to have a better experience online. But banning algorithms is not the answer, because it's the algorithms that allow online services to filter out and downrank inappropriate content and to elevate and promote healthy content. It'd be like saying we want cleaner drinking water, but then banning water filters that remove sediment and toxins. Algorithms are one of the most powerful tools we have for making the internet better for kids and teens. And because we share your goal of protecting our kids online, we respectfully urge you to oppose this bill. Thank you.
Interesting comparison between water filters and algorithms. I suppose only apt if water filters actually promoted mercury in drinking water rather than just filtering it out. The next testifier on the list is Jennifer Huddleston from NetChoice. Ms. Huddleston.
Thank you, Chair Stevenson. My name is Jennifer Huddleston, and I am policy counsel with NetChoice, a trade association whose members include many of the members that were mentioned, Google, Meta, as well as smaller members like Nextdoor, who are all involved in user-generated, or many of whom are involved with user-generated content. As a former educator myself, I understand the good intentions behind these bills. However, proposals such as HF 3724 are not the solution and have several concerns about them. Today, I'd like to highlight three key concerns. The first of which is that the bill could potentially undermine parental choice and create a false sense of security. The second of which is that it could prevent the access by young people to beneficial technologies. And the third of which is our concerns about the bill's interaction with the First Amendment. To begin with, let's talk about how this bill would play out for parents. Right now, there are a wide range of opinions that parents have about when social media may be appropriate. But this bill seeks to impose a more one-size-fits-all solution. Additionally, by giving parents the information that the government has had the algorithms turned off, it could lull parents into a false sense of security, deterring them from having important conversations with their children about how to be wise media consumers, how to know about things like the filters that are used on Instagram photos, and other things that may be of concern. Second, this bill could potentially remove access to beneficial technology to teens and young people. The bill's definition of social media is incredibly broad and includes all websites and apps on which users can post, share, and view user-created content. While many of us think about this in terms of traditional social media like Instagram and Facebook, there's a wide range of user-generated content out there. For example, a website that hosts user-generated book reviews and uses information about the books a user likes to recommend other books wouldn't be able to do that to young people under 18 under this bill. One could even see concerns arise with newspaper articles that might have user-generated comment sections. Again, for a student doing research, might not be able to receive recommendations around related articles if there's also user-generated content under this bill. Additionally, in some cases, this proposal could actually require the collection of more information on young people, as in order to implement it, if technologically feasible, companies would have to know that the young person was in the state of Minnesota and their age in order to know that they were subject to this law. Finally, I'd like to point out some First Amendment concerns when it comes to this bill. In Sorrell versus IMS, the Supreme Court ruled that information is speech and that a Vermont law could not prohibit the creation and dissemination of information, including the selling of data to a database in that particular case. Even more relevant, multiple court cases have held that the distribution of speech, including by algorithms such as those used by search engine, are protected by the First Amendment. As a result, this proposal would be the government restraining the distribution of speech by platforms and Minnesotans' access to that information. Thus, HF 3724 is likely to be in violation of the First Amendment. Now, while it's laudable to want to take reasonable steps to protect minors, this type of proposal is likely to have spillover effects on information that might otherwise be constitutionally protected, and is likely so broad that it would limit the access to this information as well. So while I understand the concerns and the desire to protect young people, I ask that you not advance HF 3724. Thank you for your time, and I welcome your questions.
Sorry, thank you, Ms. Huddleston. The next testifier is Tyler Deers from TechNet. Mr. Deers.
Yes, thank you, Mr. Chairman, members of the committee. Tyler Deers, Midwest Executive Director for TechNet. We are a national bipartisan trade association. Represent about 90 innovative member companies, and I am here in opposition to House File 3724. First off, I just want to thank the sponsor, Representative Robbins, for engaging with me on this important issue. I know from our conversations, she's passionate about the issue, and I certainly want to be respectful of that. However, I think there may be just a philosophical disagreement between us on legislative solutions to this topic. Look, the internet, as we know it today, runs on algorithms. I mean, all online searching is accomplished through them. I mean, email knows where to go thanks to algorithms. Smartphone apps are nothing but algorithms. Computer and video games are algorithmic storytelling. GPS systems, they get people from point A to point B via algorithms. Algorithms help gadgets respond to voice commands. They recognize our face, they sort photos, and they build and drive cars. And yes, the material people see on social media is brought to them by algorithms. There are many beneficial uses of algorithms in social media that would be impacted should this bill become law. Social media algorithms, in an essence, are a way of sorting posts in a user's feed based on relevancy instead of when they were published, you know, through a timestamp. So algorithms are built to learn what our preferences are as opposed to when they are posted. Should this bill become law, would the University of Minnesota, for example, you know, be prohibited from targeting a 17-year-old to come enroll in the university post-high school? Would a cereal company be allowed to advertise to its audience at Nickelodeon but not be permitted to do so on social media? Algorithms also play an essential role in moderating content on social media platforms, as was mentioned earlier. They can be used to identify material that has already been banned, such as, you know, pornography or bullying, harassment, spam. These tools, some of which are based on machine learning, provide the capacity to manage content at a speed and scale that would not be possible for human moderators operate alone. And lastly, this body just approved last year a $1 million grant to the Minnesota-based nonprofit that promotes the balanced and intentional use of technology on Minnesota youth. The goal of that grant was to create an information resource hub for all Minnesotans and would help identify a network of organizations to partner with to address issues like cyberbullying and suicide prevention, of which TechNet did not oppose. However, the grant program has not even been in effect for a full year, yet we're debating seeking to upend business models of companies. So for these reasons, we respectfully ask that you not move this bill this year. And thank you again, Mr. Chairman, for allowing me to be before your committee this afternoon.
Thank you, Mr. Dyers. Our last testifier is Maya McKenzie from the Entertainment Software Association.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Good afternoon, Chair Stevenson, Vice Chair Khatija Watoon, and members of the committee. My name is Maya McKenzie. I'm Technology Policy Counsel for the Entertainment Software Association, which is the trade association representing video game publishers and console makers. Thank you for the opportunity to testify today. The video game industry has long supported efforts and complied with laws that keep children safe online. However, House File 3724 would frustrate that goal. This bill is overbroad in scope, would stifle community building aspects of online gameplay, and unnecessarily subject video game publishers and console makers to frivolous litigation. So for these reasons, we respectfully oppose House File 3724. First, this bill as drafted is overbroad in scope as it would apply to any online platform and any content generated by said platform's users. Many video game publishers and console makers will be considered operators of a social media platform under this bill as their products or services contain certain online features that collect users' personal information and allow their users to create, view, and share their content with others. Further, any content generated by a user in a video game would be regulated by this bill. Many users like to memorialize their achievements by capturing the moment via screenshots or recording gameplay. These screenshots and video clips, though they may not feature a child's likeness or name, would be within the scope of user-generated content. Now, because this bill captures such a broad section of online activity, including gaming, the prohibition on the use of algorithms would stifle community building features essential to gaming. In some instances, an algorithm is used to determine which content a user sees. So instead of displaying gameplay from one of the thousands of games that exist, an algorithm might narrow the field and only display gameplay from games a user is interested in or has played in the past. Video game players share gameplay content to highlight their gaming achievements and build camaraderie. In fact, 77% of gamers play with others online or in person, while 74% of parents play games with their children on a weekly basis. So prohibiting the use of algorithms that aid in aligning content with a user's interests frustrates this vital community building aspect of games that unites gamers in an increasingly disconnected virtual world. And finally, House File 3724 proposes inoperable and unclear legal standards regarding the use of algorithms. This bill would prohibit the use of an algorithm that prioritizes and directs such prioritized content to a user, but does not provide clarity on what prioritization means. In addition, this bill would implement a constructive knowledge standard for determining the age of users who can and cannot be targeted via an algorithm. This standard deviates from the actual knowledge framework for determining age under COPPA, which is the federal children's privacy law. Now, the actual knowledge standard gives operators clarity on when increased protections are necessary, and businesses have adopted various methods of determining a child's age online. Without a bright line rule, an operator would be forced to apply heightened restrictions to all users to avoid risk of noncompliance, which would alter the delivery of products and services to all users, including adults. Given the unclear standards set forth by this bill, a private right of action would create unnecessary liability for video game publishers and console makers. So for these reasons, we respectfully oppose House File 3724. Thank you for the opportunity to testify today, and I'm happy to answer any questions.
Thank you, Ms. McKenzie. That concludes the list of public testimony, so we will move to member discussion and questions. And I'm going to take the chair's prerogative and go first and just say that I want to illuminate for the public. We had testifiers from organizations with the names Chamber of Progress, NetChoice, TechNet, and Entertainment Software Association, but who we really just heard from are companies like Google and Meta and Amazon, all of whom I've been sitting here looking through the about pages for these trade associations to see who are members and who provides the funding, and it's on the website. So when we hear from these groups, what we're really hearing from are the large tech companies that employ exactly the algorithms that we're discussing here. And why is it that we are hearing from these trade associations and not the companies themselves? It's because the companies know that the public is wising up to the fact that their products are doing harm to consumers, and they don't want to be associated with this. This hearing, I think, in not too long a time, 5 years, 10 years, 15 years, will look the same way to the public that hearings back in the 70s or 80s might have looked when you had trade groups coming forward talking about how they had funded studies showing that cigarettes just weren't really that bad for your health. These companies are doing immense damage to our communities and to our children. And as the father of two young children myself, I am very determined to see that we take some corrective action before it is too late on these issues generally. So that is just the way that I will start the conversation. With that, I'll turn it to Representative Patisa Latoon.
Thank you, Mr. Chair, and thank you for kicking off the discussion with such passion. I'm going to go out on a limb and say that there's probably only a few of us members in this Zoom room today who were eligible to be on Facebook in 2005, 2006, before Facebook was open to the public, to anyone over the age of 13 with an email address. It was better then, members, because it was just all your friends. It was not recommending people that you might know. It was like you got to like put your class schedule in, and you got to find people that you met on campus, and you had to search for them. And we don't have to look very far, those of us who are active in politics, to see the damage that social media can wreak on our communities. January 6th comes to mind. Beyond eating disorders, beyond any of that, I mean, there is huge, tremendous problems that are being created by these algorithms. And so I think that allowing companies to target our children as minors is somewhere where we can all come together. We can take action on that and really, like Chair Stevenson said, before it is too late. So I appreciate Representative Robbins for bringing this forward. This is a critical conversation that we do need to be having now. And I'm proud to vote yes.
Thank you, Representative Patisa Latoon. Representative Haley.
Thank you, Mr. Chair, and thank you, Representative Robbins, for bringing it forward. Chair Stevenson, you kind of took the words out of my mouth. The reaction to the bill today said a lot to me. Certainly, this is a complex issue and will be worked on, I'm sure, as this travels through other committees, but it's an issue that we need to start addressing, and I believe that's what Representative Robbins is doing, is putting that out there. To us as legislators to say, open up our eyes here. Our kids are being harmed, and we need to find a way to stop that. So I commend her for bringing it forward, and I look forward to the additional work that the legislature can do on this issue because it is really important for our kids. Thank you very much for the opportunity to comment.
Thank you, Representative Haley. Representative Cagle.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I just, for some reason, this stuck with me. How would colleges recruit or advertise to people? I remember when I had a dresser drawer full of letters. And so, I mean, there's things that I just, kind of what Representative Katiza Watun said is these algorithms are also narrowing our views of the world. And that's one of the biggest problems is that we have these keyboard warriors who are, not only appealing to our children, but appealing to our family and our friends and us, and are really putting huge divides between our community because we're able to see only what they think we want to see. And instead of actually talking to people or listening to views outside of your own, you're constantly getting reassured that what you think is real. And we've seen the misinformation through the internet. We've seen lots of different it's very, very concerning. And I'm part of this exennial generation, they call us, where we had analog analog childhoods, but digital adulthoods. And, you know, my parents used to stand outside and yell for us to come home when it got dark, not text me, not put a GPS tracker on my phone. And so I just, it's really kind of sad what we've done to ourselves. And so I think this is the least we can do.
Thank you, Representative Cagle. Representative O'Driscoll.
Mr. Chair, if you don't mind, I'd like to defer to my members that have spoken. I'd like to be the last on the GOP side to speak today, if I could.
That is not a problem. Representative Robbins, I'll give you the last word. If you wanted to speak now, you can certainly pipe in, but we will have the last word as well.
Okay, Mr. Chair, I'm happy to. I did want to respond to some of the testimony, but if that's appropriate later, or
you can
I
do it. You can do it now as well. I just wanted to make sure that you understood that you also will get the last word.
Okay, I appreciate that, and I do appreciate all the testifiers who showed up today, and especially the testifier from my side. Thank you for taking the time and being here. I know it was a hardship with your class schedule, and it really matters. But I just want to go back to a few points. And honestly, if you guys saw my desk, I've got like 4 feet of paper here because I've been spending so much time on this, and I'll spare you all that. But I do want to talk about a couple things. First of all, this notion that was raised about the education institutions and, you know, the U of M won't be able to solicit you, or if you're a kid doing a research paper, it'll be affected. So I just want members just to notice that the exception is user-created content that is created by federal, state, or local government, or a public or private school, college, or university is exempt. So let me just take that off the table. And then secondly, I also want to discuss this First Amendment issue, because I do think it matters, and I definitely, I'm not a lawyer, I'm not even close to being a legal scholar on this, but I do want to say that there's interesting case law out there. In 2003, when the Child Internet Protection Act first was enacted, there was a lawsuit. And in 2003, the Supreme Court upheld the SIPA, saying in United States versus American Library Association that it did not violate the First Amendment, even though it may block some legitimate sites, because the libraries had the filters and they could disable them for adults. So they tied the First Amendment freedom to leaving it alone for adults, but that it was okay to regulate harm against kids. And that is the point here. And so I am not going to stray into the area of some of the other comments about wanting to regulate it broadly and not using algorithms for adults. That is not my intention. This is about protecting kids from harm. And I just want to say, I mean, some of the testimony about how this actually will hurt kids because we're banning internet algorithms that could drive them to helpful content. I mean, I'm not going to read it to you, but this, I don't know if you can see it, this article from the Wall Street Journal called The Corpse Bride, members, you have to read this. And it goes on and on about how there's pro-anorexia sites and anti-anorexia sites, and they call them anti-Anna. And the anti-Anna sites are shown to still drive kids into eating disorders because it shows people binging or recovering or with feeding tubes. And that still drives kids, even though it's supposed to be showing them helpful things, it drives them further into eating disorders. And it's documented. I just have to say a couple things because I don't want to lose track that we are speaking for kids. And kids have been speaking to us and we are not listening. Kids are the ones responding to research saying, this is harming me. I feel addicted. I can't stop this. The kids are crying out and we as adults are not holding these companies responsible. And, you know, I'm a free market economist. Like, this is not my wheelhouse, right? I don't want to regulate, overregulate companies, but this is causing so much harm. And I'm just begging you to please think about how we can work together to find a well-crafted solution that will stop the harm to kids. So thank you, Mr. Chair, for letting me respond to those points.
Thank you, Representative Robbins, and I agree with you. And I was also struck by the comment about how this is what's protecting kids. It made me feel like someone saying, boy, you can't ban kids from smoking cigarettes because then they won't have advantage of the filters on the cigarettes. I mean, it's just a preposterous argument. Representative Lucero.
Thank you, Mr. Chair and members of the committee and Representative Robbins. Well, welcome to, I'll put my phone on silent here. Welcome to sticking your big toe into the water of trying to take on a technology related bill in any capacity. So this has been the issue. As one who's chief authored, co-authored multiple technology bills seeking to introduce some controls, put them in place, this happens every single time. Is technology companies come out and they try to come up with every imaginable hurdle and roadblock. Now, some of what they said is accurate. I don't put that past them at all. And as a co-author of this bill, I will readily admit there are tweaks that need to be made. There is some other language that definitely needs to be tightened up. That being said, though, the reality is we need to continue to push. As parents, as policymakers, we need to continue to push, because technology has, for the most part, been able to continue to go down this path largely unregulated into new territory. And it is always difficult trying to rein things in after the fact. That's where we are now, but we have to continue to press ahead. And Representative, Mr. Chair, Representative Kegel, spot on. Spot on in terms of screen time, interpersonal communication. It's been something I've been harping on for a long time. The generation after us is, they are not developing socially and healthily as those of us, you know, pre-modern technology era have done. You've seen many different symptoms coming up. But again, this bill, you know, it cannot be used as the, you know, to solve all of our technology ills, but there are definitely a lot of them. And so just thank you for doing this, Representative Robbins. Thank you for having the bill hearing, Mr. Chair. And again, we need to improve the language, but I'm definitely, as a technologist myself, continuing to be there to try to help in any way I can. So thank you.
Thank you, Representative Lucero. Representative Tice.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I just want to add my two cents in as well. I have a family member who had an eating disorder, and it is a family solution. And when we look at some of these things and how kids pick up their information, this is certainly a place that we can look at and say, hey, this is not okay. And you can tell me all the reasons why it's not right, but I still look at these are kids and we need to do something. And I would even say we probably have to do the same thing for vulnerable adults. That makes me wonder too. But there has to be some point where we say, you know, this is enough. Our kids have been harmed. You're not doing them good. So yes, there something does need to be done with the algorithms. And I agree, the technology, try to get anything out of your kid that isn't in code, you know. I usually have to carry some kind of a dictionary so I know what half of these things mean. I mean, seriously, I mean, kids are not, it's just shortcuts, everything's shortcuts. And not that that's the most powerful thing on the planet, but what I am really concerned about is what it does to the people we love when it turns bad. And like you said, it's like saying, well, they're not going to get to check out the filters on the cigarettes. I don't really care. Truly don't care. When you're talking about the life of a young person you love so much, and you look at what's happening when it comes to an eating disorder and to other young women going through the Emily program, I can't tell you how sad it is to think that this is okay for some folks, that we have to say okay to their messaging because it's violating something. And yet I look at someone I love and go, you've got to be kidding me. So thank you, Representative Robbins. Thank you for the support. I can't wait to see this on the House floor or wherever it ends up, because we really do need to say enough is enough. Thank you.
Thank you, Representative Tice. Representative Rasmussen.
Thank you, Mr. Chair, and I appreciate Representative Robbins bringing this bill to the committee today. And you know, as I think it was stated, you know, the work on this bill isn't done yet, and it will continue to go on. I just wanted to say, you know, Representative Robbins, you know, count me in on that, you know, free market anti-regulation lane. But I was very disappointed to hear from industry representatives that they're not doing more proactively on their part to address these concerns and problems that are very clearly touching every corner of the state of Minnesota, as you can probably hear from member comments today. And I was just disappointed that it seems like many of the industry representatives were, frankly, brushing this under the rug versus talking about what they're going to do to improve their product safety. I view this as a product safety issue for children and for young Minnesotans that does need to be addressed and looked at. And so appreciate the conversation today, Mr. Chair and Representative Robbins, and I hope that we continue this. And I would just give some friendly advice to the industry representatives to take notice and to think about what proactively industry can do to address these concerns that this committee clearly has. Thank you, Mr. Chair.
Thank you, Representative Rasmussen. Representative O'Driscoll.
Well, thank you, Mr. Chair and members. First of all, let me start by saying, Representative Robbins, in the year and a half that I've sat under this committee, under the leadership of Chair Stevenson, don't know of any other bill that has drawn Republicans and Democrats closer together on a topic than the bill that you've brought forward on here. And I would challenge any member to help you correct my memory on that. No one wants to see our young kids and our young people be trapped into things that they don't know about and they don't see. And the internet, unfortunately, is a good, I should say, unfortunately can do that, but it also has a lot of good that can come from it as well. All we are trying to do here today is to stay in a lane of traffic where the kids know they're safe and the parents know that their kids are safe. What would happen if every parent in the United States said, I can't trust the internet, my kids are getting off the internet? Yeah, kids will find a way to get on there. But again, that would harm the people who testified against what Representative Robbins is trying to do today. Representative Robbins, this bill needs work. There isn't anybody in this committee that doesn't believe that this bill needs some work. I'm going to be voting yes today, and I'm going to be asking our members on this committee bipartisanly to support this, to move it forward, to give you the opportunity to talk to more of our members in the legislature in a bipartisan way about how we can help and protect our children and help and protect others who may find themselves in vulnerable situations on the use on the internet. And as a result of that, I hope we can get to a spot where we can actually have a bill that can clean this up and make it a safer place for folks. The internet's not going away. We know that. The internet is changing, but we also have to make sure that we're protecting our youngest and most vulnerable. So again, Representative Robbins, I think you've had a good hearing today. I think you've heard from members that they're supportive. And Mr. Chair, let's take action on this thing and move it to the next committee, shall we?
I think so, Representative O'Driscoll. I'm with you 100%. I think this has been a really good hearing. I'm really grateful to Representative Robbins for putting this bill in, and this is the example of the kind of good work that we can do on the Commerce Committee when we are willing to put our heads together and try and get something done on a very important issue. So I appreciate very much the discussion from members today and the shared commitment to trying to do something about this. And Representative Robbins, I'll give you the last word on the bill.
Thank you, Mr. Chair and members. I appreciate all the comments, and I welcome the opportunity to work with you to make the bill in the best shape we can. I really do hope that this can be a model for the rest of the country. We cannot wait for the federal government to take action. They've been saying they're going to do something for too many years, and meanwhile, too many kids are struggling or worse, dying. And so I appreciate the opportunity to work with all of you on this. And again, I just want to close by just sort of sharing with you the gravity of from one of these Wall Street Journal articles, and I really hope you all take it to heart and read it. But in one study, the journal had 12 bots and that they created in the age span of 10 to 13, or maybe it was one of them was 13 to 15, one was 10 to 13, I think. But and the experiment only ran from October to December. And during that time, for these 12 bots, they were served 32,000 weight loss videos, many promoting fasting, offering tips for quickly burning belly fat, and pushing weight loss detox programs and weight loss competitions. And once the algorithms determined the bots would rewatch these videos, it began speedily serving them more until weight loss and fitness content made up more than half of their feeds. Even if the bot never sought it out, 1/3 of the weight loss videos were about eating disorders, and of those, 40% were promoting and making eating disorders feel normal. This is what's happening in a 3-month period for videos where they knew the account had been created to be a minor. And the article is full of examples of young people crying out for help, saying, we don't know how to stop. We felt sucked into it. I was pulled down the rabbit hole. I couldn't turn it off. So members, I just appreciate your time so much. I really look forward to working with all of you. Please call me anytime. You all are much more expert at this than I am. So I welcome all your improvements in the bill, and I look forward to Minnesota becoming a leader on this. Thank you.
Thank you, Representative Robbins. With that, I will renew my motion that House File 3724 be recommended to be re-referred to the Judiciary Finance and Civil Law Committee, and Mr. Dockendorf will take the roll.
Chair Stevenson.
Aye.
Stevenson, aye. Vice Chair Cotiza-Watoon.
Aye.
Cotiza-Watoon, aye. Representative O'Driscoll.
O'Driscoll, aye.
O'Driscoll, aye. Representative Barr.
No.
Barr, no. Representative Carlson.
Carlson, aye.
Carlson, aye. Representative Dabney is excused. Representative Elkins.
Elkins, aye.
Elkins, aye. Representative Haley.
Haley, aye.
Haley, aye. Representative Kegel.
Kegel, aye.
Kegel, aye. Representative Lee.
Lee, aye.
Lee, aye. Representative Lilly.
Lilly, aye.
Lilly, aye. Representative Lislegard is excused. Representative Lucero.
Lucero, yes.
Lucero, aye. Representative Olson.
Aye.
Olson, aye. Representative Farr.
Farr, aye.
Farr, aye. Representative Rasmussen.
Rasmussen, aye.
Rasmussen, aye. Representative Richardson.
Aye.
Richardson, aye. And Representative Tice.
Tice, aye.
Tice, aye.
With 15 ayes and 1 nay, the motion prevails, and House File 3724 is recommended to be re-referred to the Judiciary Finance and Civil Law Committee. Members, that concludes our agenda for today. We will be back next week with a full slate of hearings. Did I miss say the vote count? I'm seeing a note. Maybe the vote count was 15-1, and we will be back tomorrow. Boy, I'm a little caught up here on what just happened, I think. We will be back tomorrow for hearings, and with that, the meeting is adjourned.